All right, we'll proceed to hear argument in the last case on calendar for argument this morning, which is 25-776, Selina Sherman versus Six Flags Entertainment Incorporated. The court has received a letter that was filed apparently late yesterday, the concluding sentence of which says, "We ask the court to dismiss the appeal sua sponte for lack of jurisdiction and take tomorrow's oral argument off calendar." So there's two requests there, a motion to dismiss the appeal for lack of jurisdiction and a motion to take today's oral argument off calendar. The motion to take the argument off calendar is denied. Since counsel has not appeared for the argument who filed these requests, oral argument for that party is waived. And we will hear argument then from the counsel who has shown up, which is Mr. Gibbons. You may come to the lectern, please.
Although just for clarification, I do think the party, well, you may say this, but the party who has filed the request to take it off calendar is you.
Is me, yes.
Oh, so, okay.
While I'm happy to seize any advantage I can, this is not one that I can.
Okay, I'm confused. I assume that this is the second time today I've mixed up the the names of the parties, so it's been a long week. So, okay, so I, but you did show up, so you did the proper thing. You requested it to be taken off calendar, but not having heard anything, you came here and showed up.
That's correct.
But the other side has not appeared, and do you know anything about why they have not appeared?
I have not heard from Mr. Ritchie, Your Honor. My understanding is that he filed a motion to appear remotely.
Well, that was denied, and denied a long time ago.
That is correct, Your Honor. That is the extent of my knowledge. As to why he is not here today, I do not know.
Okay. What time did you file this letter last night?
About 4:15 p.m.
We didn't show up to us until the middle of the last argument. But I don't know why it was filed so late anyway, whether it's 4:15 or 10:15 p.m., I mean, we issued an order in June 2nd, I think. So this could have been filed, I would think, days before the argument as opposed to the day before.
If I may, Your Honor, the court asked us last week for a very particular briefing about a jurisdictional matter. We engaged in that research, and about the middle of the day yesterday, I ran out of reasons why I should represent to the court that it had jurisdiction. And so immediately upon exhausting my options to keep
I understand the letter, the reason why you thought there was no jurisdiction is that the amount in controversy isn't met because the amount of the settlement payment is under $75,000.
That is correct.
But as I understood what the motion to enforce the settlement sought, it was to prevent the original suit from coming back, in which the amount in controversy was over $75,000, and therefore, wasn't there more than $75,000 at stake in the motion to enforce the settlement?
That is also correct.
So then the amount in controversy was met.
That is the reading that I would most generously apply. The issue...
Why wouldn't that be correct, and then there would be jurisdiction?
My belief is that the amount itself of the settlement, because it is an independent motion following a dismissal of the action. So what we've got, at least according to Limbright, is a subsequent action in contract to enforce the terms of the settlement agreement. And the terms of the settlement agreement are the appellant's provision to Six Flags of a tax form, thereupon our issuance of the $16,000 to them. So to the extent that it is solely a contractual issue, because it's been our position all along that the settlement was validly entered into. And so if the settlement is validly entered into, our enforcement of it is simply their act of provision of the tax form and our payment of the
money. Why wouldn't we ask what would happen if this settlement did not go forward, in which case there was a controversy between the plaintiffs and your client that presumably was worth more than $75,000, given that you removed the case in the first instance?
I am here and I am prepared to answer all of those questions.
Okay, well, so why isn't this worth more than $75,000?
The underlying lawsuit is indeed worth more than $75,000.
Okay, but then if the settlement agreement is not enforced and there's a unresolved dispute, that's not a settlement that hasn't been consummated between the plaintiffs and you, why is there not $75,000 at issue?
The settlement agreement hasn't been consummated. The case has been dismissed. So in the event that the appellant or the plaintiff sought to refile in federal court, we would oppose that litigation and we would use as our affirmative defense.
As I understand it from looking at the docket of the Orange County Superior Court, the case that was filed, the duplicative case that was filed that gave rise to the motion to enforce the settlement was dismissed with prejudice. Am I reading that correctly?
Almost entirely. The original matter at issue was in the Orange County Superior Court, based on the involvement of the Buena Park Police Department and the Orange County Sheriff's Department. Turned out they weren't there, and so once they were removed from the case, we removed that case to federal court. We settled the case in federal court. The underlying events, which were Mr. Ritchie's desire to unwind the settlement, caused Mr. Ritchie to refile the original state court action. We filed a motion for sanctions under 128.7 because it was a knowingly false litigation in an attempt to keep it back in state court rather than federal court. And at the same time that we did that as a preemptive measure, we filed the motion to enforce the settlement.
And what is the status of that second case in the Orange County Superior Court?
They dismissed it within the 128.7 safe harbor.
With prejudice. So is there now a preclusion bar? The claim has been dismissed with prejudice. So is it moot?
My belief is that any further litigation is moot. But this is their appeal.
But you've not asserted a preclusion bar here or anywhere else yet.
Not yet, no.
What does your client actually want here? You want to get their tax information and pay them $16,000?
That is precisely what we want to do.
Okay. And what do you think is the amount in controversy as to this dispute over the settlement that's arisen?
There is.
You think it's at least 16,000?
It's 16K plus my 4,500 or so in attorney's fees for the enforcement action that resulted in this appeal, and then whatever time that I spent in preparing for it.
But not the value of the underlying controversy that would possibly spring back if this settlement was not finalized. Is there any case law that would tell us that that's the way to look at this?
I do not know the answer to that question. It's our belief that the parties have agreed that the case, that her claims are worth $16,000.
Well, her claims are worth $16,000? Because if that's true, why was it removed? I mean, it was settled for $16,000.
It was settled for $16,000. Right. And that's what she agrees is the price of settlement. As to what her case is worth if it went forward, I do not have an answer to that question. And we didn't conduct enough discovery as to the length of the
But
detention.
We have to know the answer to that question. It has to be that it was more than $75,000. Otherwise, you wouldn't have removed it in the first place.
They believe that it was more than $75,000.
You removed, the defendant removed.
We removed it, yes.
So you represented that you have met the diversity threshold of at least $75,000 in controversy.
Yes.
Not they, you.
They. We believe that the case was worth more than $75,000 as it stood when we removed it. Yes.
Well, if the settlement were voided on the grounds that they've contended and just nullified, what would be the amount in controversy for the resulting controversy?
It would be in excess of $75,000.
Okay. So then it would seem that the motion to enforce the settlement involves a controversy worth more than $75,000, because if the motion is denied and the settlement is unraveled, then it's more than $75,000.
We're happy to concede that and argue the merits of the settlement agreement and the motion to enforce and the appeal on that.
Okay, but then that would get you Okay, so then that would get you to the merits then?
Yes, sir.
I have to say, in my experience, motions to enforce settlement are usually when a plaintiff has not been paid by the defendant. It's very odd to see a defendant saying, please give us the opportunity to pay you. We insist, to the point of wanting to get a court order saying we want to pay you. Right. What I'm not understanding, I mean, right now your client has a settlement signed by the principals, the clients themselves, and there's no pending lawsuit. It's been dismissed. You have no claims pending in this case on the merits against you. Why do you want to enforce this? Why are you rushing? The $16,000 is yours to keep until they come to get it. Why do you want to do this? There's nothing for you to stop, and there's no litigation to turn off or anything else.
While those are certainly correct, the issue that we have is that we negotiated the settlement agreement on behalf of Six Flags with plaintiff's attorney. Once the settlement was consummated, the managing partner of plaintiff's firm, that being Mr. Ritchie, emailed my associate.
Let me just a minute. I may not have been clear. I understand all that. I'm asking, why does your client want a judgment enforcing the settlement? There's no litigation to turn off. You've already dismissed all those cases. They've already been dismissed. There's no risk to your client. They just have $16,000 they don't know what to do with because the person they're going to get paid doesn't seem to want it. But why do you want this? There's nothing to protect your client by getting this.
The object is finality and an end to whatever unknown procedural machinations Mr. Ritchie may choose to do. We'd like to pay our money and be done with it.
Well,
you just want to deal with this in front of Judge Selna, and you don't want to have to deal with this again in some future case, and you don't even want to wait for that future case to arise. You just want to pay the money now and have a court say that's done.
That is correct, Your Honor.
But you just told us he did already try to revive this suit and then ended up he's already taken his shot. He's already done.
He took his shot in state court, Your Honor. And our worry at the time was that he would refile in a different department in federal court or do something for which we had a ready remedy, or which we believe we had a ready remedy, which was to enforce the settlement agreement that we had negotiated.
What specifically did you ask the district court to do here? Did you ask the district court for any sort of injunctive relief to accomplish the completion of the payment, or did you merely ask for an order confirming that the action was dismissed with prejudice?
We asked for an order enforcing the settlement agreement, which would have required Mr. Ritchie's firm to provide us with the tax forms, which were a condition precedent to us paying them the money. In the alternative, we asked that the district court reopen discovery to address Ms. Sherman's efforts to unwind the settlement agreement by means of a declaration.
Okay. And you also asked for attorney's fees in connection with this latest dispute.
We asked for attorney's fees with regard to the enforcement of the agreement as provided for in the agreement. Yes, Your Honor.
So Cedar Fair, LP, limited partnership. Let me step back. This case went very fast in the district court. I think it was like 5 months between removal and settlement, something like that?
That is correct.
All right. At some point, Cedar Fair merged with this new company, Six Flags.
Correct.
I think in July of 2024. No substitution of party was signed. Six Flags just suddenly starts popping up in the captions. Six Flags says, oh, we're the successor to Cedar LP. But there's no substitution of party. There's no indication that there's a new party. Why didn't you file something to note that change?
At the time, Your Honor, at the time that the settlement was reached, the party was still Cedar Fair. It was between the dismissal and the subsequent efforts to refile in state court and our motion that the transaction was consummated. It was the actuality of it. It took a year and change for the parties to properly merge. To the extent that the caption was changed to read successor by merger, that was, to the extent that nothing further procedurally was done, that was my error.
All right. Well, I appreciate that, but is it your view that Cedar Fair LP stayed as a party throughout the life of this case?
Through settlement and dismissal by Judge Selma, yes, Your Honor.
And through your motion to enforce the settlement?
I believe so, yes, Your Honor.
Same party, Cedar Fair, from start to finish?
Yes, Your Honor.
Let me ask you a question. This is going to be a little something we didn't necessarily tip our hands on, but when you removed this case, Cedar Fair was an LP, limited partnership. I did not see in the removal papers any description of who the limited partners are, which is how citizenship for a limited partnership is determined for removal on diversity jurisdiction. Did you do anything to identify the limited partners? I saw two general partners identified, but not any limited partners.
I did not, Your Honor.
Okay. So have you looked at whether the limited partners in Cedar Fair are actually diverse from a California plaintiff?
It is my understanding as I stand here today, and this is based on representations at the time, that everyone was in Sandusky, Ohio.
Okay. So that's a long-winded way of saying you did not look.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
So is Cedar Fair a standalone entity anymore? It's now merged with Six Flags.
Six Flags is now the entire entity.
Going back to the district court's order, the relief granted is the court grants the motion to enforce the settlement agreements and Cedar Fair's request for attorney's fees in the amount of yada yada. The court dismisses this action with prejudice. So that's it. So you have an award of attorney's fees and a dismissal of the action with prejudice. I don't see anything there where the court ordered them to take steps to accept the payment.
It is my...
That little piece of injunctive relief doesn't seem to have been granted.
It does not.
Okay. So we just have the dismissal and the attorney's fees. And the dismissal may be moot because of the dismissal with prejudice of the action that was the subject of the motion in Orange County Superior Court, but the attorney's fees issue is not. And you only get the attorney's fees if the merits of the order are sustained.
If I may, Your Honor, the order from Judge Selma was dismissing the district court action. The first state court action was removed to federal court following the removal of the local parties, and the second state court action was dismissed by the plaintiffs themselves following our 128.7 motion.
Correct, but you now have two dismissals with prejudice. One you got from the motion to enforce the settlement and one you got from the voluntary dismissal with prejudice, you know, rather than respond to your motion as you described it. So you have two dismissals with prejudice of the essentially the same underlying controversy. So that was the basis for my suggestion that maybe the issue of whether or not the district court properly dismissed the controversy with prejudice may be moot because the same controversy is dismissed with prejudice. But the whole controversy can't be moot because the attorney's fees order is dependent on the merits of the district court's order.
Correct.
Okay.
So if for some reason you can't be in federal court because there's no diversity jurisdiction, Six Flags could file a motion to enforce a settlement agreement in California state court, right?
Correct.
No problem with that.
I don't see a problem with it.
Okay.
What was the nature of the latest state court action? Just a repeat of these same allegations?
They filed the exact same lawsuit as was prior.
With just Six Flags as a defendant or with the public, you know, entities as defendants?
With the local defendants as well. That was the basis of our 128.7 motion, was that that the addition of those was a knowingly false representation to the court.
And so then what happened in those state court proceedings?
In the state court proceedings, in the initial state court proceedings, both law enforcement agencies submitted affidavits to plaintiff's counsel, and plaintiff's counsel dismissed them based on that.
Okay, so then there was a second round of state court proceedings?
There was a second round of state court proceedings, which consisted of their filing of the same complaint and our 128.7 letter and draft motion. And that their dismissal of the second case followed our 128.7 letter.
They dismissed it with prejudice.
They did.
With prejudice.
Yes, I believe so.
But there's no possibility they can sue you again, right?
I don't believe there is.
Okay.
All right. We've taken you over your time, but we thank you for your arguments this morning, and the case just argued will be submitted.
Thank you.
All right. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit shall now depart. For this court, for this session, stands adjourned.